We'll go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, and we'll take with us Glenn West, senior writer at Go247.com, covering the LSU Tigers. Glenn, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Really appreciate it. Glenn, disappointment and even more disappointment today. And we had talked about this before with John Emery, that he had really, really worked so hard to get himself back. I think a lot of people felt, even myself, and I told John this, I didn't think he'd be back for game one. And he kept assuring me that he would be back for game one. Sure enough, and he made an impact there as a runner, also as a receiver. And then in practice, well, what happens? He tears up his knee again. Man, you talk about bad luck. That's been the case with John Emery here, one way or another. And man, you feel for the guy because he really, really worked hard to get back in shape, get his knee ready, that he could play early in the season, and he certainly made an impact for the Tigers in game one.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, stuff just keeps happening to him. It's a really bad break for John, who, you know, like you mentioned, worked really, really hard to get back into this position where, you know, he could be an impact player for LSU, and that's exactly what he was in the second half. I mean, their offense absolutely does nothing in the second half if not for John Emery. So, you know, it's a big loss for them in a football context, but just starting with the person and just kind of the personal side of things, man, he's really worked hard, and it's really, really tough to see, you know, a player tear anything, you know, twice in 12 months. I mean, that's just a really, really, really tough thing to come back from, and you hope that he can, but definitely a very sad, you know, kind of development that happened in practice yesterday. We heard it was a non-contact kind of injury, and you know, those things, you know, I think they happen. You know, it's just unfortunate that it has to happen to a guy that's already been through it.
You kind of set me up with this the biggest disappointment in this game certainly is offensive line play. Now, I know we had talked about it the last couple times you on, that this was the strength of LSU's football team. Up front, being able to move people. USC was 114th in the nation in total defense. I think they were 116th against the run. And LSU got just pushed around. They really didn't have a running game going. It was the physicality that we were looking for. You got a lot of penetration from the middle, and sometimes they kind of loaded the box on you, or they were trying to confuse Nussmeier. I saw exactly what they were doing. But the inability to run the football when you need to, Glenn, and have to, it was not there. And of anything that was disappointing, it was that.
Yeah, it was the single biggest takeaway I had from that game because, you know, I was right in that camp of, like, you know, this offensive line, if they are able to kind of develop in the run game and really prove that they could be a stout team run blocking, they have absolutely every opportunity to be one of the best units in the country. And that's not what we saw. I mean, this is an elite pass blocking team. We've known that for years, but unfortunately they have not been able to match that in the run blocking game when the big games and the big moments have mattered over the last couple of years. And, you know, look, I mean, the third and one play that got stuffed when they went hurry up in the fourth quarter, that was a huge, huge turnaround of momentum. Emory Jones, your third year starting right tackle, just kind of whiffed on a block, and they were able to get penetration and stuff. You know, I believe it was John Emery for a loss on that play. So, yeah, look, it was not a great first game from the running back perspective, because outside of that John Emery 39-yard run and one other 10-yard run, LSU was held to 63 yards on 23 carries. And when you don't have Jaden Daniels back there to help make up for some of the running inefficiency, and you have to, you know, really rely and lean on Garrett Nussmeier in the passing game, that kind of stuff happens. And, you know, you're not able to kind of move the offense, and LSU just fell into a really bad hole yesterday, or I should say on Sunday night, where they just could not get much movement in their offense in the second half. And specifically when they got into the red zone, they just were not able to capitalize all night. And I think that's probably my second biggest takeaway from the offensive side of things.
The other thing too, Glenn, red zone success, it wasn't there. And a lot of that had to do with the fact you couldn't run the ball.
Exactly.
One of the things, if you listen this week, and it was funny because normally Brian Kelly doesn't point out about a player that should be playing more. Shelton Sampson, he brought his name up a couple different times. And, he brought up before about, last year, if it was these 50-50 balls, it was more like 20% he come up with it. And then sometimes he would drop it when it hit him in the hand. So, there, I think he's telling you something without telling you that he wants to see Shelton Sampson on the field using that height differential that he has and that ability to get up in the air and make a play, especially short yardage red zone.
Yeah, look, you're going to be missing a couple of explosive weapons again this weekend. I mean, I think Chris Hilton and Kyle Parker, their status is still very much very questionable if they're going to be able to play this weekend. And look, you got some good things that happened from Aaron Anderson, who had a really nice second half on Sunday. Xavion Thomas, I think, is going to be a really cool gadget player that they can use in this offense. They've got C.J. Daniels, and they have Kyron Lacy for some length and some verticality in the offense. But look, Shelton Sampson's a legit 6'4". He goes up and he can high point the ball. And if he's able to hold on to it, there are not many cornerbacks or defensive backs or safeties that will be able to keep him from bringing in a catch. And I do think that, a big kind of bugaboo for Sampson in his first year and change has been that he hasn't been able to do that. Sounds like he's made some kind of progress this fall. If LSU's ready to put him out there in some more game action and see if he's ready to kind of take that physicality to the next level. But he's absolutely somebody that I would be targeting in red zone situations, in deep shot, deep field, looks down the field. He's got that explosive ability in his game. And we'll see if LSU's able to unlock it, because they've got to spread the ball around a little bit more. I think Nussmeier completed a ball to 8 or 9 different players in the game on Sunday, but you would still like to see guys like Sampson get involved and certainly contribute on a more consistent basis, and that makes this thing much more explosive and much more diverse.
Glenn, go back to the running back situation. Without John Emery now for the rest of the season, man, you awfully thin there. I mean, you talk about paper thin. You really paper thin with Josh Williams, Caleb Jackson basically kind of toting most of the water here of the rushing load. You're now going to have to lean on the freshman. And, how much have you seen of Caden in practice and or maybe a feedback of how well he's picked things up? Here's my biggest concern about Caden. I know he can run the ball, and he's got good eye vision. Can he protect? Because that part, man, if I'm Nussmeier, I was like, wait a minute. We know he can run the football. Can he pass protect? The one thing with Josh, now he may get run over, but he gives you a lot of effort. That was the big thing with Caleb, that he wasn't asked to do that, so he had to learn how to pass protect. Maybe a little rundown on how Caden has looked in practice or what you've heard, because I think that would be the big question mark for me, not as a runner.
Yeah, I mean, look, you made a fair point there. I mean, the reason that Caleb Jackson didn't see the ball, in my opinion, 12 to 15 times a game last year is because he just wasn't developed as a pass blocker and couldn't, just wasn't ready for the little things in the offense that he's made some strides in this offseason, and we'll see if he's able to kind of pick himself up after a pretty pedestrian first game for, what was expected out of him in the USC game. But, yeah, look, Caden Durham was a guy that, honestly, did not get a whole ton of first-team reps when we were out there watching for the first couple weeks of fall camp. It was really Emery and Williams and Caleb Jackson taking on the brunt of those responsibilities. But they're going to need Caden Durham to step up big time now. They're going to need him to kind of handle some short yardage work. And I would imagine that he gets a couple of carries at least in this Nicholls State game, because I do think that LSU's offense will be able to move up and down the field without little resistance, and you can save the legs of Caleb Jackson and Josh Williams a little bit more in this game than if you were to, say, play South Carolina this week. So I do think you have a little bit of time to get Caden Durham up to speed and ready to handle a little bit more of a workload, because LSU's going to need him. You can't go into a game with just two running backs and expect that they're going to be able to hold up for a 13-game schedule. So it's time to see him. I think he's an explosive back. He's got a lot of potential in this offense, but like you mentioned, there's probably an element of learning the little things here that we just haven't seen enough of yet to really give you a fair representation of what to expect from him on the field this Saturday.
Glenn, we get asked about it a lot, and I say, listen, all this court stuff has to be settled, but about Trey Holly. It didn't seem to be what Brian Kelly was talking about. It didn't seem that he would return this season. Your thoughts, is this something probably more for 2025 for Trey Holly to return if he returns back to the LSU team? Because it looked as though the legal stuff had kind of played almost to the end and almost like, you heard the brakes stop a little bit. And Brian speaking about the fact that he didn't seem to be talking about him for 2024.
Yeah, he hasn't been around the team either. He hasn't been at practice, hasn't been working out with the team. They've been trying to keep him in shape from afar, from what I understand. But, you know, his case right now, it was really looking like there was going to be some traction in July, but they pushed a hearing back into September 18th. And so that's kind of the next date you look at here for Trey Holly. And in terms of if he can get these things dismissed or if he's going to trial, we'll have to just wait and see on that. But September 18th is when this next hearing is supposed to happen, and we should get some more clarity. I would be very surprised if we see him at all this season, and unless they, you know, get to that 18th hearing or the September 18th hearing and they just drop the charges and he immediately is eligible and ready to go back to school and all that stuff. But he's not with the team right now. Don't know that he will be anytime soon, and we'll just have to wait and see what that September 18th hearing kind of tells us about his situation.
Sunday before the game, we had on Pete Jenkins with Jeff Palermo, and I. We were at Acme Oyster House doing the pregame show, and asked him about Savion. I got to see Savion Jones play so much when he was at St. James, and he was an undersized defensive end from a weight standpoint, not height standpoint, weight. I don't think he was 225 when he got to LSU. Matter of fact, I would question if he was even 220. Pete says, listen, Mike, blame that on me. I got him to put on some weight and that he could play some defensive tackle because we were so shorthanded there last year. But he said, I saw it wasn't working, so we kicked him back outside. And he thought Savion would have a big season this year. Sure enough, man, he come out the box, and Savion was really impressive, got a couple of sacks, got some pressures, got a batted tip ball up in the air. So we see now the glimpse of the guy that when he came in that he had the potential to be. And I know one thing, coaches told me this, Mike, he's going to be a better pro than he is as a college player.
Yeah, look, I think the media is kind of pumping their fists right now about the Savion Jones hype because there was a lot of it coming out of fall camp that we got to see, and I think he's proved us right here after one game. I mean, he had two sacks. He had the deflection at the line of scrimmage that was almost picked off by Whit Weeks. I mean, he was probably the one player that was consistently getting after Miller Moss and getting into that backfield and creating some havoc. And I will say that was one positive that I think you can take away from the defense. They were they created opportunities to make plays. You know, they had a couple of chances at interceptions that they weren't able to capitalize on. They had a couple forced fumbles that they couldn't recover. So, you know, there's progress being made there. And I think Savion's play is a big part of that. But you'd like to see LSU be able to capitalize some more and force some turnovers, get some game-changing plays and momentum swings to go their way on defense because, look, I thought the defense held up pretty well overall. I mean, through three quarters, Lincoln Riley's offense at USC had 13 points, and we're struggling to move the ball against LSU's defense. So, you know, look, there's some things you have to build on. Of course, the two touchdown drives there in the fourth quarter really killed LSU. But I really am pleased by Savion's play. I think he's going to be a guy that LSU leans on heavily going forward and is going to have a really nice season. And we'll see if he goes to the NFL after this year. But certainly this first year was this first game, he's off to a really nice start.
One of the things, too, is the safety play. And I think we talked about it in the offseason a few times. It's not going to be long before the puppies come into play. I mean, they're not going to be watching. They're going to be playing. And I think there's every indication that we're going to be seeing the two young backups in more than just a backup role.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of DeShawn McBride DeShawn Spears, I should say, this weekend. You're going to see a lot of Kylan Jackson this weekend next to Jordan Allen. Jordan Gilbert on that last play of the fourth quarter that USC almost scored on. He got hit with that targeting call, and he'll have to miss the first half due to a suspension because when you have that targeting call and you get ejected in the second half, you have to miss the first half of the next game. So he won't be playing in the first half, and I think this is an absolutely huge weekend for DeShawn Spears in particular because he's got a lot of fans in that building at LSU.
Yes,
and
he does.
He didn't play a whole ton in the first game, and I think that was probably just LSU wanting to lean into the veterans. But I think if he goes out there and he shows that he's ready for this and ready to play at this level, LSU will absolutely lean into him more going forward. So this is a big weekend for him to kind of really assert himself as a key part of the rotation and maybe even a potential starter here going forward.
Glenn, this is the type of game in the second half you're going to see a lot of young guys, freshmen, redshirt freshmen, whatever. You're going to see that. Are you looking at anybody in particular? My first thought is Ricky Collins, at the quarterback position. I don't know what happens. I think I know they go with the veteran here. But Ricky, I think, has flashed some moments here. And for him, he wants to get some game tape out there. Because if he's not the guy, if Garrett decides he's going to play another season at LSU, and he also sees that freshman from Michigan coming in, he wants to put some tape out there of the type of quarterback he is. And so I think Ricky Collins is one of the guys I want to watch. Is there anybody else that you're taking a look at as they play Nickel State?
Yeah, look, I think Ricky's a good one that we could see in the second half. I think we could see all three of those guys if LSU really pulls away. Get a couple drives in the second half apiece between Collins and A.J. Swan and Colin Hurley, the young freshman. I wouldn't mind seeing him for a couple series at the end of the game either. But in terms of guys that could really show up here in the second half or kind of later in the game, somebody to maybe really watch is P.J. Woodland, the cornerback. I mean, he's probably going to play a lot in the first half of the game, but I think LSU would like to get a good long look at him opposite of Ashton Stamps and a couple of these other young defensive backs. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit more of JV and Toviano at the star position behind Major Burns in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Joel Rogers, who's a safety. I think this is a great opportunity for LSU to see what they have in their secondary in terms of their young players and guys that maybe could be a little bit further along in terms of playing on the field and during games than maybe they've shown in practice. So we'll see. I think that there's a couple of guys that come to mind, the defensive tackle wise, maybe you get Ahmad Bro and Dominic McKinley some reps up front. So there's a lot of guys that I think you could see, especially in that third, fourth quarter, if LSU's kind of done their business and pulled away some that could be deserving of some opportunity and some game time.
Glenn, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Always appreciate it, buddy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All righty. Glenn West, senior writer at go247.com, does a great job covering the LSU Fighting Tigers.